We're holding Crocodile on the days, the second line from the bottom. We started talking about when a person eats cheese and meat, and we talked about the different possible orders in that. So we said that they can be eaten bafikoden in a careless way, meaning without washing and without cleaning out your mouth in between. And we talked about, does that mean davka after cheese before eating meat, or does it mean even after meat? Doesn't mean even after meat before cheese, and doesn't mean any kind of, or doesn't mean specific. In that case, then it would specifically mean as far as bird meat. Okay, so the Gemara continues, and then at Tanya we're looking at Braisa. Bishamah says he has to clean out. Mekaneach literally means to wipe. So he has to wipe his mouth out with something before he eats the other one. When we say mekaneach over here, do we mean to wipe his hands or do we mean to wipe his mouth? So Rashi says we're talking about his mouth. Most Rishonim agree. On the other hand, the Rambam says we're talking about washing his hands, wiping his hands. But we're still learning Madiach. The Sillah says he has to rinse. So again, to rinse would mean to rinse out his mouth. So it could either mean to drink something, or it could mean to swish out his mouth, or it can mean to actually wash his hands. So the Gemara says, "Ma'im kaneach or ma'im madiach." Well, what exactly do we mean when Bishamai and when Bishamai is saying the kaneach and Bishol is saying madiach? What do they mean by it? Ilema, do you mean that Bishamai omim kaneach v'loy boi madiach? Does it mean that Bishamai says you just need wiping and you don't need to wash? In other words, basically, Bishamai would be saying that wiping is more effective. Or Bishol omim loy boi mekaneach. Or Bishol omim medeach loy boi mekaneach. Bishol says that you just rinse out your mouth or your hands according to the Rambam, and then you don't need to wipe them. So in other words, would we say that wiping kinuach is more effective than hadocha, than rinsing? And therefore, so Bishamai would say that once you wipe them, you don't need to rinse. And Bishamai would say that, no, you rinse and then you don't need to do the stronger thing of wiping. That's how Rashi learns. Tosfos has some difficulties with that. So Tosfos says that, no, there's no question that washing, hadocha, is more effective than kinuach, wiping. So therefore, so Bishamai, maybe it sounds like, says that wiping is enough. You don't need to wash. Bishibul would say that davka, it's not enough to wipe. You also need to wash. So would it mean that? The problem is, Ela hada amar Zeda and kinuach peh. The problem is that Zeta says the only effective way to wipe out the mouth is in order to be able to eat. But again, when you've eaten cheese, Rashi says to eat meat afterwards would only be to use bread, namely that you chew bread, and then that effectively cleans out, and that effectively cleans out your mouth.
Doesn't that depend on what you've eaten? If it's sticky and like, you know,
no,
honey
talking,
or
well,
chocolate.
Well, we're talking milchiks and fleishiks, respectively. I mean, if you eat chocolate, you can eat something else afterwards, right? And we're talking davka about milchiks and fleishiks. The point is, in other words, so are we going to say that if after you ate cheese, you need to wipe out your mouth and you wipe it out by eating some bread? And Observer says that's the only valid way to do it. Now, if you're going to tell me, but Shammai says that you have to wipe, and Bishol is saying Mediach, whether you learn like Rashi, that it means that Bishol is saying that Mediach by itself is it, that you're saying that Bishol is saying Mediach by itself is enough, or is it that Bishol is saying that that Bishol is saying you need both? You specifically need, it's not enough to do kinuach. You also need to wipe. Well then, come on. Well then, who would Reb Zeira be going like? To Bishamai? Would he be going like Bishamai? According to Bishol, there's no kinuach. The halacha is almost always like Bishol over Bishamai. So there's no reason we should expect that Reb Zeira should be saying a halacha like Bishamai. So we can't understand them that way. Ella, no, we have to understand rather differently. Bishamai is going to say that you have to rinse it. Beloy boi madiach, meaning they're saying that you don't need to rinse at all. Bishol says it's not enough to wipe It's not enough to wipe, which, as Rabbi Zera said, is by eating bread. You also need to rinse. You also need to rinse, whether by swishing it around in the mouth.
Why did they make this additional gzera when the Rashi is talking about bishul, not about eating?
Precisely because, as we started talking about yesterday, because the Torah doesn't specify afila, it specifies only bishul, and therefore you might think that eating it is actually allowed. And second of all, because you might think you can't cook them together, but if they're cooked, you might be able to eat them. But b'chlal, also, this is a case where each one by itself is mutter, and only the combination is also. So therefore, we're going to be machmir in various ways to make sure that there's no mixtures between them, so that people don't get careless.
What's that? Can you repeat that? I don't understand the logic.
The logic is that when you have something that's always osur, for example, non-kosher meat, you don't need so much halachas, you don't need so much gzeiros about it. But when you have something where meat by itself is completely mutter, and milk by itself is completely mutter, and only the combination is osur, and on top of that, the Torah doesn't even say in so many words, don't eat it, then there's the concern that people might get careless with it, and therefore we have reason to make various gzeiros and halachas on it.
You think that they would, I mean, the Gemara thinks they would be careless enough to think that achila, bishu is like achila?
No, to think that maybe you're not allowed to cook it, but once it's already cooked, you're allowed to eat it. Yeah. But in any case, that you might get careless in the first place. You're going to think to yourself, well, each one by itself is mutter. What's the problem with the combination? And you're not going to realize. Okay, so let's go on. So we're going to say this shama and the kaneach. This shama is going to say you have to wipe your mouth between one and the other by, as Reb Zera had said, by eating bread. Voloi bori madiach, but then you don't have to rinse it afterwards. Whether by rinsing you have Rashi and many other Rishonim learn that it means that madiach means to wash it out by drinking something. According to the Rambam, it means rather more to it means to drink and swish it around in the mouth. But again, according to the Rambam, all of this mekaneach and madiach we're talking about over here is about the hands, not the mouth. Because you may have grease or whatever from bits of cheese stuck to your hands when you're going to go eat meat. So we're going to say Bishrama and Mekaneach. Bishrama would say that you have to wipe. Veloy Boy Madiach. According to Bishrama, then we would say you don't have to rinse. But Bishrama and Ma'at Madiach, Bishrama says that it wouldn't be enough to wipe. You would also need to rinse. Well, the problem with that is Havalei Mekula Bishrama and Mekula Bishrama. Then it comes out, we have one of the cases where Bishrama is Mekel and Bishrama is Machmer. Whereas we learned yesterday that's something unusual. And whenever we have such machlokas, there's always specific mention. So they're all listed in the Sechta Adias. So it should be listed. So it should be listed in the Sechta Adias where it deals with those things, the cases where Bishrama is Mekel and Bishrama is Machmer. So that doesn't work either. Ella, no. What we're going to say is as follows. Beshama and Mekaneach, for who are din lamediach. Beshama is going to say, no, the other way around. When we say Beshama and Mekaneach means you have to wipe, for who are din lamediach, but also you need to wash out your mouth or your hands, as the Rambam learns. So it means, in other words, they're saying both. They're mentioning one thing, but they do in fact mean both. Vesilah and Mediach, for who are din lamekaneach, whereas Vesilah says, you have to rinse. You also have to wipe. So it comes out, there's no actual machlokas. Maro machadro, maro machadro, v'lo pligi. So it comes out, each one is saying something different, and they're not arguing. Each one is mentioning one of the two things that has to be done. So that's how Rashi and Tosfos learn. The Rashba learns differently, that if the Maskana, the Gemara, is saying that each one says that one or the other is good enough. So again, this is all we're talking about, that a person, for example, has eaten cheese or milk, and now he wants to eat fleishik. So again, as we talked about yesterday, me'ikir adin, you don't need any waiting period between them. You just need, as we're saying over here, this mekaneach and mediach, this washing and wiping to make sure that any residue is removed. According to Rashi and Tosfos, we mean washing and rinsing out, and we mean washing and wiping his mouth. According to the Rambam, it means wiping and washing his hands. There is, by the way, if we're talking about as far as the hands, there's an interesting point. What about if you eat with utensils? So there are achronim who say that maybe in that case you wouldn't need to wash your hands. But then there are other poskim who say that even then you would. Mice and before you, and we can see even we eat with knife and fork. Sometimes a little bit of the grease or whatever of the food gets on our hands. Okay. So the Gemara says Gufa, getting back to what we said before, Amar Abzeda en kinua haper elabapas, this wiping out the mouth is effective only by eating bread. So the idea is, in other words, like when a person eats and chews bread, then it effectively cleans out what was in his mouth beforehand. However, the Gemara says, Vahani mili b'dechiti, that would only work if it was wheat bread. Al b'dechari loy, but not if it was barley bread, because barley bread, Rashi points out, just crumbles in the mouth, and so therefore it doesn't really, like this, you need something that has a consistency to it. You think of it like wheat bread, that's the idea, is because of the gluten in wheat bread, therefore it tends to hold together more solidly, and therefore, when you eat it, then it can effectively wipe out the mouth, but barley bread is not so, it's more crumbly. And the Gemara says, even when it comes to wheat, we're only talking about when it only works if it's cold wheat bread. But if it's hot, then it doesn't work. Mishta shatri, then it's because it's so soft, it just gets spread around the palate, around the roof of the mouth, and it doesn't do a good job of wiping. And furthermore, hani mili b'rakicha, and also it would only work if the bread is soft, but if it was hard bread, then it also wouldn't work because then it doesn't do a good job because again it crumbles. However, the Gemara says the halacha is not like that. You don't need dafka cold. You don't need dafka cold wheat bread. But b'chol mili have a kinuach. In fact, eating almost anything is going to be effective for kinuach, for this wiping out the mouth. Levami kimcha, except for flour. The tour has a girsa that is specifically barley flour, which would imply that other kinds of flour are good. But then later that's an Or HaChaim, but in your day he says just flour. So does it mean dafka barley flour? Does it mean dafka wheat flour? Does it mean whatever? Anyway, the point is that you can't use flour for that purpose. Tamri or dates, the yarka or vegetables. Those don't do a good job wiping out the mouth. But anything else, so any kind of bread would be fine, and any kind of most other foods would be fine as well. Again, as we talked about yesterday, Al Pi Kabbalah, you're supposed to wait an hour between Mofix and Fleishix, and that's what we do anyway, so that even this business of wiping out the mouth and everything is not going to be enough. So there are... Furthermore, in this connection, by the way, given that we're saying that in the end the Gemara had said that understanding Bishama and Basilil, that you need both Kinuach and Hadacha, again, the Rashba learns that it means not, that it's one or the other. In Shulchan Aruch, it says that you have to do both. If you're going to eat cheese and then you're going to eat meat. And then the Shach points out that it doesn't matter which order you do. On the other hand, the Levush say that you should do the Kinuach first, and that way, so you do the Kinuach, you do the wiping, and then that's still going to leave like particles left, and then you do the Hadacha to get rid of those. Fine. The Gemara continues, Rabbi Asi has a question of Rabbi Yechanan, Kama Yisha ben Bosel Gvina? How long does a person have to wait between eating meat and eating cheese? So here we were talking about before cheese and then meat. So again, we're saying in principle, you don't need any time. All you need is to do this kinuach v'hadach business. But now, what about the other way around? If a person ate meat, how long does he have to wait to eat cheese? Amalei v'loi klum. So Rabbi Yechanan says nothing. Or you ate meat, you're right away allowed to eat cheese afterwards. So the Gemara says, Amy, is that so? Rav Chista says that if a person ate meat, he's not allowed to eat cheese right afterwards. Now, there are two major ways that the poskim go about what the problem is with cheese or any milchiks after meat. One way of looking at it is that the fatty taste remains in the mouth. And therefore, so now you're going to have later on, then you eat, and it takes time for that fatty taste to go away, as we're going to talk about soon, how long you have to wait. And then you have another way of looking at it. It's not that Rambam puts it. It's not so much the fatty taste, but rather particles that remain between the teeth, as the Gemara is going to mention soon. So when we're saying that Rav Chista has said you're not allowed to eat cheese right away, in other words, most of the Rishonim explain that even you did this kinuach v'hadacha, you're still going to have to wait a certain amount of time. As opposed to where after cheese, then you use kinuach v'hadocha would be enough. On the other hand, Tosfos learns that no, Rabbi Natan learns in Tosfos earlier, and then this comes up again a few times in the Sugya, that no, actually what Rav Chista means is even after meat, as long as you did kinuach v'hadocha, you actually wouldn't need to wait. So in other words, Rav Chista would be saying, ochel basar, if you ate meat, osu lechol gvina, you're not allowed to eat cheese unless you do kinuach v'hadocha in between. But according to that way of looking at it, according to Rabbi Natan's way, if you did kinuach v'hadocha, then you would indeed be able to eat cheese right afterwards. Again, according to most Rishonim, it's not like that, and the halacha is not accepted like that. The halacha is you do need a waiting period, as we'll talk about soon. Anyway, the point is, and Rav Chista continues, Gvina mutalach basar. But if you ate cheese, then you're allowed to eat meat right afterwards, because cheese, the fattiness of it doesn't stay in the mouth so much. Again, as we talked yesterday, unless it's hard cheese, as we talked about yesterday, the definition of that. And also as far as particles of it between the teeth are less likely to get stuck. Although there is a point, the Maharam Rutenberg says that he used to tack and not wait after cheese before meat, until one time he says he actually found bits of cheese stuck in his teeth. He actually says that the Maharam Rutenberg writes in a trova, he says, I used to make fun of people who would wait after cheese before eating meat. They'd be maker when it comes to chicken, but they'd be machmer when it comes to regular meat. So he says, the Maharam Rutenberg says, when I was younger, I used to make fun of that. It almost seemed like minus to me, or like a toast. But then one time, he says, I one time ate cheese, and then later on, I found particles of it between my teeth. So then the Maharam says, I decided to myself to be machmir with meat after cheese, just like cheese after meat. So that's not considered. He says, don't think that that's going against what the Gemara is saying over here. Because as the Gemara is going to go on to say, you can make halachas in such things. So again, you know, in principle, the halacha is not like that. In principle, as long as you did kinuach v'hadocha, you would be allowed after most kinds of cheese to eat meat. But again, you have the concept based on the Zohar to wait an hour between them. Okay. So in any case, here Rabbi Yochanan is saying that after meat, you don't have to wait any at all for cheese, whereas according to what Rav Chista is saying, you can't eat cheese right away, you would have to wait. What Ravasi's question was not about cheese after meat, the other way around, Tama Yisha, then Gvina Labasar, how long do you have to wait after cheese before meat? And on that, Rabbi Yochanan tells him nothing, you just need kinuach v'hadocha, and then you can eat meat right away. Gufa, so getting back to what Rav Chista said, Rav Chista, ochel basar, ochel osel lechem gvina, if you ate meat, you're not allowed to eat cheese right afterwards. Gvina mutar lechol basar, but if you ate cheese, you're allowed to eat meat right afterwards. What about if there's meat left stuck between the teeth? Is that considered meat so that you wouldn't be allowed to eat cheese unless you take it out first? Or maybe once it's stuck between your teeth, then it's not really considered meat anymore, and you don't have to worry about it. Rav Chista answers, Kori Ale, he referred him to the Pasuk, and the Pasuk says about when the Jewish people complained in the Midbar that they wanted meat, and Hashem gave them slug, and the Pasuk says, Abosar Adenu Ben Shinehem, the meat was still between their teeth, and then Hashem caused the plague to break out. So we see that, yes, even when it's between the teeth, it's still called meat. So again, one thing is then, we have the different Rishonim that talk about what the problem is b'chalal after meat. Is the problem that you have fattiness left in the mouth, or is it the problem that you have pieces stuck between the teeth, and even kinuach v'hadocha is not going to remove those? So it actually comes out, the Torah points out, there's a kula and chumra in each one. According to Rashi, if it's a matter of that you still have the taste and the fattiness of it in your mouth, so then it would only be if you actually ate it, if you just chewed it. Let's say, for example, to chew food for a kid back before they had baby food, then maybe it wouldn't be an issue. According to the Rambam, the problem is what's between your teeth. You would still have to wait because you may not clean your teeth properly. On the other hand, what happens if 6 hours have passed? According to the Rambam, that the problem is only the meat between your teeth. At that point, after 6 hours, it's already considered digested. Whereas according to Rashi, you would still have to clean your teeth to get rid of that. But in any case, so if you have meat between your teeth, then you have then you have this question, and sort of Chister explains saying that yes, meat between the teeth is still considered meat for this purpose. There's a few different explanations.
Now, if you floss, right?
Yeah. So if you floss,
Do you have to follow that?
So it comes out then, according to the Rambam, maybe you wouldn't have a problem because you have removed all of what's between the teeth. But according to Rashi, you still have the taste and the grease of it in your mouth. So therefore, you still would have an issue. But then
it's not about the meat, it's about the grease then.
So that's the thing. So according to Rashi, it's about the taste and the grease of the meat. According to the Rambam, it's about the bits that are stuck between the teeth.
But the Torah talks in the desert, they talk about the meat, not about the grease. Why is Rashi saying it's about the grease?
Because according to Rashi, you have two different questions over here. Number one, you have the issue of grease. And number two, you have another question. What if a person finds meat stuck between his teeth? Then would we still have to be concerned about it? And again, you could have a case where a person only has meat stuck between his teeth, but there's no actual grease in his mouth, as the Torah gives an example, for example, where he's chewing the food to soften it for a baby.
So according to Rashi, even if you floss, you still have to wait.
Yeah, yeah. And the fact is that's the halacha. You have to wait. You have to wait regardless. Okay, you have a few different explanations in the among achronim. What exactly was the point of Rabbi Acha by Yosef's question, especially if we learn like the Rambam that to begin with, we said they have to wait because of meat between the teeth anyway. All right. So fine. The Ran does point out something. He says that even if we're saying meat between the teeth is called meat, but suppose a person did eat meat and then waited the 6 hours or whatever, and then he found, let's say it's not 6 hours yet. Let's say an hour later he realizes there's meat between his teeth. Then he wouldn't have to count 6 hours from when he flosses and removes that. He could count 6 hours from when he originally ate it. So the Gemara says, Omama Ukva, Anola Hom Milsa Chalaba Hamra Lagabe Abba. When it comes to the following matter, as far as waiting between meat and cheese, I'm like vinegar that comes from wine relative to my father. Namely, my father, says my Ukva, was much better in this regard. The Ilu Abba, Ki Abba Ocho Bistro, Lehaba Ocho Gvin Adla Mocha Ad Hashta. My father, if he would eat meat at a certain time today, he wouldn't eat cheese until the same time next day. So he would wait 24 hours. But my Ukva says, I don't do that. I don't eat it at this meal. But I will eat it at the next meal. Now, if he knows that his father was machmir on that, why is he not just machmir on him? Why isn't he not machmir on himself in the same way? This is a vote attributed to the Baal Shem Tov that says basically these kinds of minhogi chasidus. It's not just you can't just take them on randomly. A person needs to be on top of the level for it. If he's not on that appropriate level, then he shouldn't be doing it. So Ma'okva realizes that he's not on the level of his father, and therefore he shouldn't be taking on a homer like that. And of course, most of us are not machmer like that as well, although it is brought from certain Yechidis Segula that they would do that. It's brought about the Shalor HaKadosh, it's brought about the Arizal, that in fact they would tack a wait 24 hours. Whereas Ma'okra is saying, I wait only until the next meal. Now, what do I mean by the next meal? So here you have, here you have several different opinions of Rishonim. Tosfos learns, again, where Ben Atan has said in the Sugya, that you actually don't have to wait after meat before cheese, as long as you did kinuach v'hadacha. So Tosfos says actually what it would mean is, even for example, if he benched and then they're removed and they cleared the table, and then he washes again and eats, then Tosfos says it would actually be allowed. So sudas achrona just means you can't eat them in the same meal. You would have to bench and clear the table in between. Most Rishonim do not learn like that. The Rambam and a bunch of other Rishonim say that no, it means you have to wait the typical amount of time between the morning meal and the evening meal. The Rambam writes 6 hours, and this is where we get the 6 hours from. So the post can talk about, does it have to mean exactly 6 hours? Can it mean 5 hours and change? So, so you have different points about that. And in addition, you also have different minhagim about it. You have the minhag of Dutch Jews is they wait only 1 hour. That seems to be based on the fact that, again, based on Tosfos, you shouldn't have to wait at all. But the Zohar says you can't eat meat and cheese within the same hour. So fine, then in that case, you wait an hour. There's also a minhag of Yekes, of German Jews, to wait 3 hours. It's not so clear where that comes from. See, but it's all based on this idea that we're saying Sudos Achrin. It has to be in another meal. And the poskim say, in fact, it is necessary. You absolutely have to have, though, that they're not in the same meal. Meaning, in other words, in the sense that, for example, if you ate, for example, on Shavuos, when you have milchuk and you have fleishik, so you can't, for example, just eat the milchuk, just wait, and then eat the fleishik. You would in fact have to bench in between, and only then afterwards can you have the meat. But this is where we get the concept of 6 hours from. And the Marshal has an interesting explanation about it. He says it's not really they had a Kabbalah that you should only eat misuda l'suda. So now Marukva's father took the view it meant from the main suda of the day until the next time. The main suda of the day, and those are 24 hours apart, meaning a person doesn't just eat every 24 hours, but the person has one main meal that they eat during a certain time of the day, and Marukva's father held that's what it meant, misudasa from one meal to another, whereas Marukva himself took the view that I can't be machmer so much, so it just means the two sudas within the same day, which are typically about 6 hours apart. Okay. Next, the Gemara continues. Since we're mentioning this, that Ma'ukva is saying that he feels in this regard inferior to his father, that his father had a more stringent minhag and he has a more lenient one. So that in a similar vein, Omar Shmuel. So Shmuel says that Anola, the Gemara digresses now from this matter of meat and milk to talk about Omar Shmuel. Anola ha'milsa chalabach chamer l'gabe abba. I, as far as the following matter, am like vinegar that comes from wine relative to my father. My father would look over his properties twice a day. So he would go visit his properties, his real estate, twice a day to check what they need. Whereas I check them only once a day. So in other words, my father was better in that regard. He actually checks twice a day. It can mean, in other words, that his father. So besides for the simple meaning that it means to actually Pasha check his properties, and this way of stitching time saves nine. You know, if you find something, as we're going to see an example soon in the Gemara, when you take care of a problem before it starts becoming bigger, then it's much more effective. So therefore, so he's doing that. So Shmuel's father was checking that for twice a day, and Marashal says, it means exactly what it sounds like. Tzaddikim are very careful about their mammon, so they don't end up becoming poor and have to have hanah from others. So therefore, Shmuel's father was exceptionally careful with that, and he would check twice a day, whereas Shmuel was saying would check only once a day. And there are different points in Achronim about that. The Chofetz Chaim explains the whole thing. It's not just talking about physical property. We're also talking about a person making a cheshbon nefesh in himself. So Shmuel's father would do that twice a day. In the middle of the day, he would think, you know, in the morning I took on myself, I'm going to do mitzvahs today. So how have I done so far? And then at night, he would also, you know, how did I do during the second half of the day? Whereas Shmuel was saying that I do that only once a day. Okay. So Da'omah Shmuel, as in fact Shmuel says, Man desayu nichse kol yoyma. If a person checks his nechosim every day, Mashkach istira, he's going to find an istira, which is a silver coin. In other words, he's going to gain from it. Because again, he proactively finds what's wrong and fixes it before it becomes a bigger problem, and therefore he gains a great deal by that. So the Gemara gives some examples of that. Abaya habat sayu nichse kol yoyma v'yoyma. So Abaya used to do that, in fact. He would go and check his properties every day. Yom Echad Pogba Arise, one day he met up with his Oris, he met up with his share, an Oris, the sharecropper. You hire somebody to work your fields for you, and you pay him a certain percentage of the crops. The Dari passed for the Ufi, and this guy was carrying a bundle of wood. So he was trying to steal the wood from Abaya's property. So Amalei, Sabaya says, Hani Lahecha, where is this wood going? Where are you taking it? Amalei, and now the guy who was caught, he needs to make up an excuse fast. So he says, Lebein Mal, I'm bringing it to your house, to the master's house. But Abaya realizes that this was just an excuse, and really, if he hadn't caught him, he would have taken them himself. Amalei, so Abaya tells him, "Farkid muchor rabbanon, I'm way ahead of you. They told us to check our property every day, and now in fact, it's a good thing I did, because otherwise you would have stolen that bundle of wood, and I wouldn't have known." Here also, the Chofetz Chaim brings in this connection, continuing with this idea that we're talking about a cheshbon ha-nefesh, that this oris stealing the wood represents the Yetzer Hara. Like a Yetzer Hara is your partner, like an oris is kind of your partner. So then he's saying that the Yetzer Hara wants you to do something, and you ask the Yetzer Hara, well, why do you want to do it? And he's claiming, I want to do it for a mitzvah, and Abaya says, yeah, when you do a proper cheshbon ha-nefesh every day, then you'll realize that, no, you're not claiming to do it for a mitzvah, you're just trying to play a trick over here and doing it for your own purposes. Similarly, the Gemara says, Rav Asi have a sayon nichsei kol yom. Rav Asi used to also check his properties every day. But every day he's going and checking his properties and he's not finding anything wrong. So after a while he says, Heichaninu kolani yistiri de Mar Shmuel. Where are all these yistiras, all those coins that Mar Shmuel said that I'm going to gain from it? It doesn't seem like I'm gaining anything from it. So again, Begashmius, that he's checking his properties, and Beruchmius, that every day he's doing a cheshbon ha-nefesh and not finding anything that seems to be out of place. Well, Yom Echad had its chozet sinur de Babka Ba'are. One day, he saw that there was a hole in the dike around his property. They would have canals to bring the water to bring the water to their fields, and they would have dikes and then levees around the water channels to keep it from flooding the fields. And so then they would just open it up at the appropriate times to water the field. Now one day he saw there was a hole over there. And if it's not fixed, then the dam is going to break and the field is going to get flooded. Shakli said, what is he going to do right on the spot? Shakli was Glimei. He took off his coat, Karche, and wrapped it up, and then tightened it up, and stuck it into the hole as a temporary plug. Then Roma Kola, then he yelled out loud, Osu Inshi Sakrua, and other people came to fix the dam. So he says to himself, and Avos Habach adds the word Omar, he says, Ashkachtinu l'kulu istiri d'mar Shmuel. Now I found all of those istiras of Shmuel, that yeah, I was doing it every day, and I was wondering what it is, but now dafka today, I found the problem, and if I hadn't found it, then it would have been a much worse problem. So again it means both Begashmius and Beruchnius, that there are things where the Yetzer Hara can easily get you, and if you're proactive and you know and you're up and you're wise to his tricks, you can see where a small leak is starting, then you can prevent it from becoming much bigger. In that connection, by the way, the Chofetz Chaim refers to a Gemara in Tainis that says that Abaya used to actually Abaya, the Gemara says that Abaya used to get a greeting from Shemayim every Erev Shabbos. So he was very much the type then to be doing a personal cheshbon ha-nefesh for himself and to be easily wise to what the Yetzer Hara is doing, so that when he caught this guy with the wood representing again his Yetzer Hara trying to get the better of him, then he was immediately able to recognize it and then get rid of him. Getting back now to matters of milchiks and fleishiks and related topics, and now we're going to further digress to talk about the matter of washing before the meal. We're going to talk about three different kinds of washings. You have mayim rishonim, which is when you wash for bread. Yeah, we're familiar with that. There's mayim achronim, which we wash at the end of the meal, as we'll talk about soon, why you need to do that. And you also have something called mayim emtsoyim, which literally means middle waters, which is going to be between one dish and the next. Are we talking about between one dish and the next, where they're both of the same type, both milchik or fleishik? So Tosfos further on says, yes, that's what we're talking about, both milchik or both fleishik. And the point is, in other words, you have to remember, in those times, people ate with their hands, and therefore you would get food on your hands, and therefore you want to wash them between one and the next. On the other hand, Tosfos learns there, on the other hand, Rabbeinu Tam learns there in that Tosfos, it means between a fleishik and a milchik dish. So we're not talking about, Rabbi Natan explains, we're not talking about where you're eating the actual flesh or the actual meat or the actual cheese itself, but rather, for example, we're talking about, let's say, chicken soup. You're talking about, let's say, for example, chicken soup, and then you're talking about some kind of food that, uh, that contain milfoke, but that contain a milfoke flavoring, but doesn't really have milfokes in it right now. So then Tosfos learns that here we were talking about before kinuach v'hadacha, but here we're talking about because neither one has the actual substance in it. It doesn't have actual meat. It doesn't have actual cheese. Then you wouldn't need sacher. Then the most you would need to do is rinse your hands in between. But as the Gemara is going to say, it's only rishus. Again, this is following Rabbeinu Tam's shita that you don't need to wait after fleishes before milchiks. Lemaisa, first of all, we don't pass them like that, and second of all, the consensus of the poskim is that even you have, for example, a chicken soup or something like that that has only a meat flavor, even though it doesn't have the mamoshes or the meat, it's still considered like meat for that purpose, and you still have to wait the 6 hours. Okay. So now we're going to talk about the dinim. Now we're going to talk about the dinim of these various kinds of washings that we're going to have from here over the next couple of blocks, then we're going to be talking about quite a bit of the dinim of Metilas Yedashim. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Idi bar Oven, Amar Rav Yitzchak bar Ashiyan, my Mishonim mitzvah, to wash before you eat bread, is a mitzvah midrabanan. It's considered one of the official 7 mitzvahs to Rabbanan. We have many things that the Chacham told us. We have 7 particular things that the Chacham told us as like mitzvahs asay, things that we should do, and washing before bread is one of them. Today's Rosh Chodesh, Hallel is another one. V'achronim choiva, on the other hand, to wash my achronim is a choiva, is an absolute requirement. Now, as the Gemara is going to explain, choiva is the distinction between different types of mitzvahs, things that you have to do. The usual distinction is you have rishus, something which is completely optional, mitzvah, something which is proper to do, and choiva, something which you absolutely have to do. On the other hand, Tosfos points out, the fact is you have a choiva, you have an obligation to keep mitzvah as well, so what's the actual difference? So Tosfos says the difference would be, for example, if you're soldiers in an army camp. The Gemara explains in Erevin that soldiers in an army camp are potter from washing for bread. On the other hand, we're saying over here that when it comes to Mayim Achronim, because, as the Gemara is going to say, because it's done because of the danger of Melach Sidonis, they are of Sidon salt, which can blind a person. Therefore, that is a choiva, that's an absolute requirement, that even the soldiers in the army camp still have to wash Mayim Achronim as well. Tosfos, by the way, also brings up a point from Halachas Gedolos. The ones before, when you wash for bread, as the Gemara is going to explain later on, there's a reason why the Chachamim made that takana, and therefore you have to make a bracha for it. My machronim is only because of the potential danger from Melach Sedomis, therefore you don't make a bracha on it. As the Rambam phrases it, to put it a little differently, you don't make a bracha on avoiding, on doing something that you're doing in order to avoid danger. So, in fact, Tosfos says in that connection, for example, that when we say Krishma Shalomita, how come we don't say a bracha before it? But we don't say a bracha to do the mitzvah, Asher Kedushan Mitzvah Zivana, the Krishma, and the reason is because there also, that Krishma is not really, you're not doing it really for the mitzvah so much, you're doing it for protection during the nighttime, and therefore there's no bracha on that. So there's a general rule that you don't make a bracha on such things that are only for protection. In any case, we're saying that Mayim Rishonim is a mitzvah, but Mayim Achronim is even stronger, is a choiva. Now, nowadays, where many people are careless and don't always do Mayim Achronim, and the post can give a few different reasons for it. The Gemara is going to talk about one thing is, again, is this Melach Sedomis, where we don't commonly have Melach Sedomis among us. Another point is also because of the grease that gets on your hands from the food. Well, nowadays, we usually eat with utensils, and therefore you don't have that issue. Okay, so the Gemara says, Mesvi, though, I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, Mayim Rishonim V'achronim Choyva. Mayim Rishonim and Mayim Achronim are both Choyva. And Soyim Rishus, only the ones in the middle between one dish and another, are Rishus. So the answer is fine. Mitzvah, Gabi Rishus, Choyva Korigwa. When you have something which is Rishus and you have something else which is a mitzvah, then because mitzvah, after all, is something that you're obligated to do, it's just not as strong as Choyva, but we can call it in a looser sense Choyva. In other words, relative to Rishus, this is a Choyva. But you have to know the finer distinction between would be Rishus, mitzvah, and Choyva. So in other words, Mayim Achronim you should do, but Mayim Mitzoyim rather you should do. Mayim Rishonim and Achronim, there's a stronger basis that you have to do that. Mayim Rishonim because of a takana of the Chachamim, and Mayim Achronim because of the danger. Okay, so the Gemara says Gufa, well, getting back to what we said, We said the Braise says that washing before bread and washing and maim achroinim at the end of the meal, choyva, those are an obligation, and soyim reshus, but in between, between one tavshal and another, is only a reshus. Again, whether we're talking about, as Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Shmuel, we're just talking about both meat dishes or both cheese dishes, but you rinse your hands between them to get rid of the residue of one before you eat the other, but when it comes to meat and then cheese, then again, it's a, you would have to wait until you'd have to wait 6 hours, like we said before. And again, Rabbi Natan disagrees and says we're talking even between a meat dish and a cheese dish, but we're talking about where they don't contain actual meat or cheese, but they just have a flavor of it. In other words, Tosfos might say, for example, we're not just talking, let's say, for example, a chicken soup that just has a flavor of chicken and doesn't have any actual chicken in it. Could be. Tosfos would mean even, let's say, for example, if you have maybe like noodles with cheese or something where the cheese is not so be'ein, it's not so noticeable. Well, depends on how much you put in, I guess. But yeah. Okay. In any case, So the Gemara says, so fine. So you have that din, maim rishonim and achronim are choiva. And again, we said that maim rishonim are mitzvah and maim achronim are choiva. And tsoyim to wash between one tabshal and the next is rishus. Another din, rishonim notlin ben b'yat, ben b'kli, ben agave kata. When it comes to maim rishonim, you can wash them wherever the water is going to go. You can wash it into a container, or you can wash it where the water is going to go on the ground. Achronim, a notlin, el b'kli, but maim achronim, you have to wash dafka into a keli, because as the Gemara is going to say, on Amud Beis, because of a ruach ra, because of an evil spirit that rests on that water. So again, we said many people are not so careful with mayim achronim, and the poskim do give reasons for it. On the other hand, there is an idea that Gemara mentions later on, that there's we learn from a posuk, the skadish to be yisim kadoshim, to do mayim achronim, and so the poskim talk about really you should be careful with it, and up zoya, or taka helps remove a ruach ra from your hands, etc., and therefore it's the right thing to do. Okay. The Gemara says the Amri law. Now, there's others who say, as far as the Maim Achronim, that we're saying that when we said in the first version that you can only wash them dafka into a keli, but Amri law, others say, Ein Nothan Agabe Karta. What it should rather say in this Braisa is that Maim Achronim, you cannot wash them onto the ground. So, in other words, the implication would be, well, if you can't wash them onto a ground, you have to wash them into a keli. So, the Maim Achronim, well, what's the practical difference? Either way, it sounds like the Maim Achronim have to go into a keli and not fall on the ground. And the answer is ikabinau kinsa. Suppose you're washing my machronim over little chips and sawdust of wood. So if you say that you need a keli, well, it's not a keli. But if you say that it's not that you need algabe karka, then that it can't be algabe karka, then that's not a problem because it's not directly algabe karka. And the my machronim is going to rest on it only when it's algabe karka. And in fact, the Magen Avraham says the same thing. For example, if the floor is tiled, by the same thing, a la karka would have to mean literally on the bare ground, and therefore it would mean that if it's a tiled or paneled or whatever wood planked or whatever floor, then it would be allowed. Fine. More distinctions between Mayim Rishonim and Mayim Achronim. Mayim Rishonim Notlin Ben Becham and Ben Betzayin. When you wash before bread, you can use either hot or cold water. Achronim Ein Notlin Ela Betzayin. But Mayim Achronim have to be washed with cold water. Why? Because hot water softens the hands. Mefapin is like we had in the previous parak about Chelev Mefapeya, that chelev and fats penetrates and goes through all the meat. In the same way over here, hot water causes things to penetrate the hands. That in Mavir and Sazul, so they don't remove the filth that was on the hands. Just the opposite, it causes it to get absorbed into the skin. So therefore, you have to use cold water. When we say cold, do we literally mean cold? Would it be what about lukewarm water? So you have different understandings about that among the Mefoshim, whether lukewarm water would be fine, and it's got the hot water that's a problem, or whether even lukewarm water better you shouldn't use. Fine. So now, when you said Mayim Rishonim Notlin Ben Mechamin Ben Betzonin, we said that when it comes to washing before bread, then you can wash with hot water or with cold water. But Moses says, Amrav Yitzchak Bar Yosef, Amrav Yana, Lo Shono Ela She'ena Yad Seledes for him. That would apply only when the water is not so hot that Yad Seledes, by the hand would recoil from it. The post-skin discussed what temperature that would be. The consensus of post-skin is at somewhere around 110 degrees, give or take. But if the water is that it's so hot, then you cannot wash even Mayim Rishonim with them. A different definition of Yad Seledes Bo that we find in a Gemara elsewhere is where baby's stomach would get burnt by it. Different opinions among the poskim how exactly we measure that nowadays. Okay, so again, according to this first conclusion that we're saying, you would not be allowed to wash even Mayim Rishonim with hot water. The Ikka the Masnulah Seifa, on the other hand, some learn Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Rabbi Yosef's statement as referring to the end of the Braisa, where it says, Achronim en notun elabatsonin, that Mayim Achronim can be washed only with cold water, implying Abu Bachamin lo, that you can't wash with hot water. So on that, Om Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Yosef, Om Rabbi Yane, lo shano elasha yad seledis, behen, that would only apply when they're so hot that yad seledis bro, then you cannot use them for Mayim Achronim. Abel, ena yad seledis behen, but if it's not so hot, notun, then you would be allowed to wash even Mayim Achronim then. So it comes out, in other words, according to that way of looking at it, when it comes to washing for bread, there's no problem using hot water at all. And then most of the poskim learn that way. The Maharshal disagrees and says that even then you shouldn't be using hot water for washing, but the consensus of poskim is not like that, and you're allowed to use hot water, even Yad Seledes Bo, for washing. One of the important point as far as water for washing is that it has to be drinkable. It has to be drinkable by an animal. So it can't be dirty water or whatever. We'll talk about it later on, but it doesn't matter if it's hot water. On the other hand, Mayim Achronim was saying you can't use hot water. And the Tiferes Yaakov argues that the Gemara is saying you could use lukewarm water for Mayim Achronim, but he's saying even then the Gemara is implying that it's better not to. It is better to use cold water if you can. So the implication is that Mayim Rishonim to wash for bread, Afa Pisha Yad Seledes Bo, even though Yad Seledes Bo, Mutter, you would be allowed to wash your hands with it. And again, that is the halacha. Okay. Now, we said Emtsoyim Rishus, we said that to wash Emtsoyim between one thing and another in the meal is Rishus, is an optional thing. So Amar Rav Nachman Lo Shano Ela Bein Tavshil La Tavshil. That applies only between one dish and another. Again, you have Tosfos as a discussion, whether we mean two meat dishes or two fleshic dishes or two milk dishes, then you could wash your hands between them just because you ate them both with your hands, and therefore to clean your hands between one another, as opposed to, again, between milchik and fleshic or vice versa, then you would need kinuach la'adocha, and if it was fleshic, then you would also need to wait 6 hours, etc. On the other hand, Tosfos says that Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Tam that no, tabshul over here means not actual meat itself, but only like, for example, chicken soup or something like that, that has a flavor of it, but not the actual mamon. Washes of it, and therefore we're saying that you only need that reshus to wash between one and another. Again, halacha is not accepted like that, and the halacha is even if you have something that has a meat flavor to it, you still need to wait after it. So the Gemara says again, Amar Rav Nachman Leshano Ela Bein Tavshil LaTavshil. This would apply only between one tavshil and another. Afa Bein Tavshil LaGvina. But if you're going to eat a meat dish and then you're going to eat cheese, Choyva, then it's an absolute requirement to wash your hands, because again, then you have the problem that you have some of the grease or some of the particles of cheese on your hand, and then that's going to be a problem later on when you eat the meat. Again, if you're not waiting between them. As we said before, according to the Zohar, you're supposed to wait an hour between them. Getting back to Mayim Achronim, the Gemara says, Omer of Yehuda Breid Reb Chiya, Mifnei Ma Omer Mayim Achronim Choyva, why did the Chachamim say that Mayim Achronim is an absolute requirement, even more so in a way than Mayim Rishonim? The reason is, Shemelach Sedoim is Yesh, because there's Melach Sedoim, a type of salt that comes from Sedoim, Shemesame Asainayim, which blinds the eyes. If it gets into a person's eyes, then it can make them blind. Now, the Gemara mentions in Brachas that after your meal, you're supposed to eat a little bit of salt. Now, the posts can say that nowadays we don't do that because the food we eat usually contains salt anyway. But in the Gemara's times, apparently more often they would eat their food bland, so then afterwards you eat a little salt to help the digestion. Well, then you're touching the salt directly, so now if you put your hands, having touched the salt, on your eyes, then the person might become blind from it. Or even the Rambam says, maybe not Melech Sedoimus itself, maybe not specifically salt from Sedoim, but any other salt that has the same characteristics, that has a similar chemical composition or something. In fact, the Rambam says, now it's interesting how the Rambam phrases it. The Rambam says, there's some Gersoris of the Rambam have kol es ha-melech. That kol, as we're going to have soon in the Gemara, would mean if a person measures out salt, if a person is measuring salt with his hands, then he would need to wash afterwards, even though he's not eating it. On the other hand, there are Gersoris in the Rambam that say kol sham melech boy, anything that contains salt, and according to that Gersor, it would mean even if you didn't actually eat salt itself after the meal, like Rashi is bringing from Brachos, but rather you just ate bread that contains salt, then you still have this potential problem of melech sedoimus, and it's still this potential problem of melech sedoimus, and therefore you need to wash my macharonim. Now again, here's where the Poskim points out on Amud Aleph that melech sedoimus is really not common nowadays. We don't typically have melech sedoimus among us. So therefore there may be less of an issue with the requirement for my macharonim. So nevertheless, again, the Poskim talk about it, and also there's this point. We don't dip our fingers in salt and eat some after the meal, but on the other hand, there are other reasons to say that it should be necessary to do. Amar Abaya says, you can find an entire quart of salt, which is a large amount. 30 saw, you can find one little grain of such salt. In other words, it's not very common, but nevertheless, there's enough of it that it could potentially cause a problem. So in other words, it can mean that you only have a drop or only a tiny bit in each kur, and nevertheless we're choshish for it, that maybe after you ate this particular particle. Or another way of looking at it is that you have throughout the whole quart of salt, you're going to have altogether one grain, but in other words, you have within the individual little grains of salt, each one is going to have a little bit of it. I mean, each grain itself, after all, is made up of multiple grains that are microscopically stuck together, so therefore the idea might be Tiferes Yaakov says that it means that within a kur you have altogether the amount that adds up to one grain, but it's scattered and dispersed throughout the whole kur. Okay. So the Gemara says, Rav Acha b'Rav Ashi, kol milcha mai. What about if a person measures out salt with his hands? So he's not eating it, but he's measuring it out. Does he have to afterwards wash his hands? Or is it dafka when he's eating? Amalei, let me buy it. So that Rashi says, needless to say, of course, he touched so much salt, of course he needs to wash his hands afterwards. So again, here the Rambam has one Gersa in the Rambam is exactly that. The Rambam uses the same expression, kol, in the Gemara over here, where kol is a rare word that means to measure. So kol milchamai would mean one if he measures salt, and then it would mean that the Rambam is bringing that halacha, and the other Gersa in the Rambam is kol sham melech boy, anything that contains salt, any food that contains salt, you'd have to wash afterwards by machranim. So now, getting back to, we mentioned my machronim, that you're not supposed to wash my machronim onto the ground. So the Gemara is going to start by saying what the reason behind that is, and then the Gemara is going to digress. The Gemara is going to mention a bunch of things that Abaya says, I used to not understand the reason for a particular practice, and now I understand. So and the first one of those is that matter, is this matter of washing my machronim and not washing directly on the ground, but either into a keli, or as we said before, on a pile of chips of wood or something. So Amar Abaye, Meresh Hava Amina, I used to think, Haidolei Moshu Maya Basroi Alara, the fact that we don't wash Maya Machroinim directly onto the ground, Mishum Zuama. I thought the reason is because of filthiness. Maya Machroinim is filthy with what comes off onto your hands, and therefore it would be disgusting to have a puddle of it on the floor. Amali Maya, but my Rebbe, who was Rabba, told me, no, the reason is Mishum Deshaya Ruach Ra Alayu, because the Ruach Ra rests on that water. So now, in other words, the idea is that if somebody else walks on it, then it could be a danger to them. The fact that the Mayim Achronim is filthy, by the way, is the reason why after we wash Mayim Achronim, and usually, yeah, we are often at the table when we wash Mayim Achronim, it's into a keli, then people cover it afterwards. The reason is because you don't want something dirty and filthy on the table while you're benching. So now the Gemara digresses again, for Abaye is going to mention a bunch of other things that he says, I used to think the reason for a certain practice is such and such. And my Rebbe told me, and my Rebbe, Rabba told me that, no, there's a different reason. Rabba was not only Abaye's Rebbe, he actually helped raise him. The Gemara tells us in Kiddushin that Abaye's parents passed away before he was born, his father, while his mother was pregnant with him, and his mother died in childbirth, and Rabba and his wife raised Abaye, and therefore, and Abaye was actually his nephew, so Abaye always calls Rabba my Rebbe. So, Om Rabbi, Meresh Havamina, Haidla Shokol Midim Psoda, so I used to think, Haidla Shokol Midim Psoda, the fact that it's not right to take something from the table to eat, Kinokish Inish Kosolam Mishte, when somebody else is holding a cup and drinking, I used to think the reason why not to do that, Shemayere, Dvaukha Kola Besuda, because something might go wrong during the meal, in other words. So I'm taking something. The other person really wanted to take it. He's gonna get angry that I wanted to take that and you took it. But now he's in the middle of drinking, so the drink may go down the wrong way and he'll choke. So Abaye thought, I used to think that was the reason. Amali Meir, and again, my Rebbe told me, the reason is, Mishum Dekoshi, the Ruach Tzroda, because the problem is, doing like that, causing that somebody taking something from the table to eat while somebody else is drinking, can cause the one who's holding the cup, the one who's drinking, can cause him Ruach Tzroda. Rashi translates Ruach Tzroda with a French word that means like getting confused, like getting mental confusion. And there are a few different explanations. Rashi elsewhere explains that it means a migraine headache. Rabbi Gershom says over here it means epilepsy. And you have a few different explanations of what Ruach Tzuradeh is. Ben Yehoyada points out nowadays, a lot of these things that we're saying over here because of Ruach Ra and such things, those things are less prevalent nowadays, and therefore people are less careful with it, and it's not so important. Maybe also the difference is nowadays, when Baruch Hashem we live in a time of much greater plenty, there's really not much of a concern that if you're taking something, somebody else doctor wanted that one, and therefore there may be less of a concern as well. However, the Gemara says, "Well, I am an elder to shock of
one." What's the French word for it, Alexander?
The French word Rashi uses is estourdissant, which means something like in modern French, it's the word is something like étourdissement or something like that, which means like confusion, like mental confusion. Rashi uses the same word at the beginning of Chumash when the pasuk says "Va'aretzoyse soyu vavoyu." Rashi uses the same word to translate "toyu," that it means like it was astonishingly empty or something. Yeah.
Tourismal means more lightheadedness.
Okay, so maybe something like that. Okay, so fine. Okay, so maybe the meaning of the word has shifted a little bit. Okay, the Gemara says, "Well, I'm moran el d'shok of lemedem." Now that would only apply if he takes the thing and doesn't put it back. Like he takes the plate, a serving dish or whatever, and he takes the whole thing. Av mishko v'aduri, but to take it, and then he takes something, and then puts it back, less than brother, there's not a problem, that doesn't harm anybody else. And v'loy amaren, ella chutz v'arba amas, and further, that would only be if he's taking the thing out more than 4 amas away from the table. Av toch arba amas, but if it's within 4 amas, less than brother, then it's not a problem, because that's if it's near the table, then it's an expected thing, you're taking it in order to eat something. Furthermore, this only applies to something that's needed for the suda, one particular type of food or one particular type of keli that's on the table that's needed for the purpose. But if it's just something on the table that's not actually needed for the suda, so like a centerpiece or something, less one bug, then there's no problem. You can take it even when somebody else is drinking. However, the Gemara says, "Ma bravashi kofed afilo aasisa or buchne the tavli." Ma bravashi would however, really, an example of that. Ma bravashi would be careful, even for example, you had a mortar and pestle that are used for grinding up spices. When you had such a thing, a spice mill that was on the table, so you wouldn't take them while somebody else is drinking, because those are midi tzvichi l'sudasa. Those are, after all, something that's needed for the suda. So they're not necessarily something you're actually necessarily using during the suda. You would b'fashos grind up the spices beforehand, but nevertheless, Ma'abud Avashi held that that's an example of something that's needed for the suda, in case maybe, for example, you run out of spices and need to grind up more or whatever, and therefore he would be careful about this when somebody else is drinking, not to remove it from the table. And again, as Abaye had said, originally I thought the reason is so the other person doesn't get upset and then choke and then choke on his drink, and Rabbi explained it's really because of this Ruach Tzroda. Then, you know, you ought to point out. I mean, so let's say, for example, if it's a matter of the Bao Kao Kala, what happens, for example, if you yourself are the Bala Bais, so then you have every right to take whatever you want from the table. The other person shouldn't get angry at that. On the other hand, if it's Ruach Tzuada, then that would also be a problem. And he goes on to mention some other examples where there might be a difference between the two reasons. V'omra Baya, Baya says another thing. Meresh Havamina, I used to think, Haide Kanshi Nashvara. The fact that after the meal, people sweep up the crumbs, I used to think, Mishum Menachirusa. The reason is, Pasha, to keep the house clean. When the pieces are larger than a certain amount, then anyway, you have a halacha that you can't leave them on the floor because people might step on them if they're a kazayas or more in size. But here we're talking about the pashtus if they're less than a kazayas. So Abai says that you should think, Pasha, the person wants to keep his house clean. So therefore he sweeps up the crumbs afterwards. Amali Ma, but my Rebbe told me, no, it's not exactly that. Mishum de Koshila Aniyusa, because not sweeping up the crumbs and people step on them is bad for poverty. It causes the person to become poor. So the Gemara explains, in Pesachim that the malach in charge of riches, meaning that Hashem sends a person riches through that malach, is called nokid, which comes from the word noki, which means clean. So the malach of riches likes a clean house. On the other hand, the one of poverty is called novel, which means something like miserable and degenerate and dirty or whatever. So he likes dirty things. So when he sees the house is dirty with crumbs, then the malach novel comes over there and the malach nokid stays away. So therefore, sweeping up the crumbs is a way of attracting. Instead, you'll have the malach of nokid, of cleanliness. Okay, so the Gemara tells in this connection, Ahu gavra to have a mahadir alay sora da aniyusa, there was a certain person where the malach of poverty was really after him all the time. This malach was going to try to cause him to become poor. Well, I have a yochalai, but he was never able to have any effect on him because zohar anishvara, because he was always careful about the crumbs to sweep him up after he ate. He was very careful about sweeping up the crumbs. One day, the guy was sitting and wrapping bread, meaning eating. Lifter in the Gemara on the side, it says it should really be rifter, which means bread. Korach rifter literally means wrapping bread, because that's how they did. Their bread in those times were like laffas or pizzas or wraps or something like that, and they would wrap it around the food and eat it that way. Anyway, so this guy was wrapping his bread and eating food ayavli on top on the grass out in the meadow. So he was having a picnic on the grass. Omar, so now this malach says to himself, Hashtavade nofel b'yadoi. Now for sure he's going to fall into my hands. There's no way that he's going to be careful to pick up all the crumbs of that. What? Busted the ocho after the guy had finished eating. I see Mora. He took a shovel, akrinu liyavli, and he dug up the grass in the area where he'd been eating with all the crumbs in it, shadinu lanara, and he tossed it all into the river. So in other words, we see that the problem, Magen Avraham points out, the problem is stepping on them. We see that there's not a problem throwing it in the river. On the other hand, the Chacham Tzvi points out that no, throwing in the river means the fish are going to eat it, or something. So then that's not a problem. But for example, throwing it in the garbage, according to him, might be a problem. Okay, in any case, so the guy threw it all into the river. Shami de Kama, now the guy heard the Malach saying, Vaida Apriahu Gabri Mbese, woe that this person has thrown me out of his house. In other words, forget about it. I'm never going to have any chance with this guy if even when he's eating on the grass, he's so careful about getting rid of the crumbs. Then there's nothing I can do with him. Continues. Abaye says, I used to think, the fact that you don't drink the foam on the top of a glass of a drink, of beer or wine or whatever, I used to think the reason is mishum isusa, because disgusting, it's not such good stuff to drink. Omalimar, and my Rebbe told me, Mishum de Koshila Barsam. The reason is because it makes a person susceptible, a karsam, actually. It makes a karsam. It makes a person, on the side, it says a different gear, so the barsam. Anyway, it makes a person susceptible to karsam. Rashi explains that karsam is a runny nose. There are different other explanations among Rishonim. What karsam is, among other explanations, is that it's arthritis or pleurisy and inflammation of the lining of the lungs. So you have a few different things and a few different possibilities of what the problem is of drinking the foam on top of the glass. So the Gemara points out, Mishte kosher lekarasim. So drinking it makes a person susceptible to karasim, as we said. Minsachbei, minpachbei, on the other hand, if a person blows on it to blow it away, kasher lereisha, that's bad, it can cause him headaches. Midchiye, and to push it aside, kasher lana yosa, is bad because it can cause a person to become poor. So the Gemara says, Maitakante, well, what are you supposed to do if you can't drink the foam and you can't push it aside and you can't blow it aside and you can't push it aside with your hand, then what should you do if you have a glass of a drink with foam on top? So the answer is the shake shakui, get the foam down and press it down into the drink until it goes away on its own. I've heard it said actually. I've heard it said actually that especially you put your fingers on it. Your fingers contain natural oils, and those tend to break more of the surface tension and cause the bubbles to go down faster. Okay. So the Gemara says the karasim the chamra. Now, if a person is suffering from karasim as a result of having drunk the foam from a glass of wine, then what can he do to cure it? Shichrei to drink beer. The shichra, what happens if he drank a glass of beer with the foam on top, and now he has barasim? Maya, then he should drink water. The maya, but if he had a glass of water with foam on it, and then he drinks the foam and gets barasim, less leitakanta, then there's nothing you can do to fix that up. This is like a popular expression. People say, poverty follows the poor. In other words, this poor guy, all he can afford to drink is water, and now he ended up suffering from barasim because of it. Now he doesn't even have, now there's not even any drink or anything that will help him get rid of the barasim that he's suffering from, karasim rather, that he's suffering from. Another one, I used to think, the fact that people don't eat vegetables from a bundle that the gardener put together, in other words, a gardener picks a bunch of vegetables and then makes a bundle of them and then he takes them to sell, I used to think the reason why you shouldn't just pull out a vegetable from the bundle and eat it, I used to think, instead you untie the whole bundle, I used to think, it looks like a gluttonous way of doing it, like you can't even wait until the bundle is untied, you have to pull one out. But my Rabbi told me, the reason is Mishum to Koshi Lakshofim, because it makes a person susceptible to witchcraft. And the Gemara gives an example in this connection, a story in this connection. Rav Chista and Rabbi Bar Avuna have a Ka'azri Baharba. One time, Rav Chista and Rabbi Bar Avuna were traveling on a boat. A certain Goyish lady said to them, let me sit together with you. Loyos for, but they didn't want to have her sit with them because it's Nios or whatever. She didn't like that. Omra Milsa, so she said a thing. She said a spell, a magical spell, a Sautama Araba, and with that she stopped the boat from going. Omru Inu Milsa, they also said something. They also said a counter spell, and Shayua, and with that they were able to make the boat be able to go. What did they say? Rashi gives two explanations. One is that they knew this kind of witchcraft. Now, Yid's not allowed to do witchcraft, but here they're going to be in danger from her and her witchcraft. So they used something, a counter spell, in order to save themselves. Then Rashi says another explanation. They used the name of Hashem, but Rashi says v'loy mochem nosa. It's not so clear that that's correct. That you should be able to use a name of Hashem for that purpose, or Rosh Yosef says maybe what Rashi means is that it's not clear which explanation is correct. There is a vort attributed to the Baal Shem Tov that says that it's not that they said milsa, a word, but rather they said mem lamed saf, which stands for machashefa lo sechaya, where the Torah says don't allow a sorceress to live. So therefore, so she's doing this, she's trying to do sorcery on them to stop their boat from going, so they counteracted that by quoting the pasuk where Hashem says don't allow such a sorceress to live. And with that, the boat was able to go. So now she says to them, my Eved Lahu, so what can I do for you? I can see you're immune to my kind of witchcraft. I see, she was able to see with her magical powers, that you never wipe with a shard of earthenware. The Gemara in Shabbos talks about, back in the day, before they had toilet paper, you had to have something to wipe with after going to the bathroom. And a common thing people would use is shards of earthenware, but the Gemara says there it's not good to do that because it makes a person susceptible to witchcraft. So now she says, you never do that. You never kill a louse on your clothing. You take off the clothing first, and then you kill the louse. And you never eat from a vegetable directly from the bundle that was put together by the gardener. Again, you untie the bundle first, which, as we just said, not doing that makes a person susceptible to witchcraft. So therefore, she tells them, I give up. I can't do anything to you guys because you made yourself immune to witchcraft by being careful with all those things. Now, in that case, how was she able to stop the boat in the first place? So one answer is, in other words, that one answer, Marichal says, she didn't know that they had done a counterspell. If she had known they did a counterspell, then she would know. That's why, the name of Hashem is the case, maybe, then she would know that's why they were able to save themselves from her. But she didn't know that, so she attributed it to these three things. And also, Marichal says, look, we see she wasn't able to harm them in the first place, only their boat. And therefore, she's saying, you guys, yourselves, at least the boat, I was able to stop with my witchcraft, but you chachamim yourselves, I'm not able to touch, I'm not able to harm, because you're careful with these three things. Another one, but I'm going to buy him. Maybe I should have on me. I used to think, when people don't eat a vegetable that fell, ataka would be onto the table, or there are different gears on the side of it, here it says mitaka, from the table. So I used to think, and it fell on the floor. I used to think, because it's disgusting, it got dirty. But my Rebbe told me, no, mishum de kosher, the reich haper, it makes a person susceptible to bad odor from his mouth. So therefore that would be a reason not to do that. So we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. We'll continue with more of these statements of Abaya. I used to think the reason for this is because of this, and I was told by my Rebbe that the reason is such and such, and then we'll continue and we'll talk more about the dinim of Mayim Rishonim and Mayim Achronim of washing before and after the meal.